morning and welcome to the Lodestar podcast News in Brief. If you've been here before, welcome back. Thank you for joining me. And if you've not listened to this podcast before, then we are going to be rounding up the week's supply chain news and giving you an insight on what you might see on the Lodestar this week. So there were no new tariffs last week, which is a nice change. Trump did say that he would reduce the 145% tariff on China, but not to zero. And he didn't give any timeline or exact figure, so no surprises there. China has said that there are currently no negotiations happening. One thing that did cause quite a bit of commotion last week, though, was the updated proposal from the US trade representative with a fee on China-built ships calling at US ports. So in short, the proposal looks set to go through, but in a less severe format than what was initially proposed. Fees will be charged per string rather than per US port call. From October, Chinese-built ships calling at US ports will be charged $18 per net vessel tonnage or $120 per container discharged, whichever of those figures ends up being higher. By April 2028, the charge will rise to either $33 per net tonnage of the vessel or $250 per container discharged. But for Chinese lines, this is slightly different and a bit more severe. So from October, Chinese lines must pay an additional $50 per net tonnage, regardless of where the vessels were built, which will gradually increase to $140 by April 2028. Ships smaller than 4,000 TEU and those on voyages of less than 2,000 nautical miles are exempt from these charges. Now, the clear loser here is Chinese carriers, and Drewry's Simon Heaney said that they are effectively going to be priced out of US trades unless they are prepared to swallow the much higher taxes. And we also reported that this is going to cause a bit of tension between alliance partners if one carrier is more exposed and the others want to shield themselves. So clearly the Ocean Alliance partners, which is OOCL, Costco, CMA CGM and Evergreen, are the most exposed. And Drewry said that if they divide up ships within the alliance across different trades, so that the Chinese carriers focus on the non-US routes, such as Asia to Europe, and the other Ocean Alliance carriers look after the Trans-Pacific and the Transatlantic. But Drewry said that the forced concentration of certain carriers into the US lanes could reduce options for shippers and could even run into antitrust competition issues if just one or two carriers become very dominant on that lane. So it's definitely going to be an interesting one to see how the Ocean Alliance deals with this in the next few months. Now, obviously, there are lots of losers in this, but I'm now joined by the Lodestar's Gavin Van Mull. And Gav, you wrote a premium article about one clear winner in all of this. Can you explain what you meant?
Well, yes, Charlotte, of course I can. What I was referring to was really ports in the Caribbean region and shipping lines there, which very much all fall into both being smaller than 4,000 TEU and being under the 2,000 nautical mile thresholds. The proposals, as they were originally envisaged, with this blanket 1 million port call fees, would have absolutely massacred the Caribbean shipping trade. You've got to remember, these are what they call lifeline services. So it tends to be a lot of, you know, small populations on a very diverse range of islands, which can only really be served by small ships. And one of the submissions to the USTR was from a carrier called Tropical Shipping, which has around sort of, I think, a fleet of around 19 vessels. There's around sort of 10 various lifeline services hubbed in the Florida port at Palm Beach, but going all around the Caribbean. And according to them, the original fees would have led to an extra cost of $4,700 per TEU.
Oh my gosh.
Which would have just, it would have made everything completely uneconomic. And then how do you serve these populations? You know, because this is stuff like food, medicine, and, you know, essential construction materials, the basis that you need to keep an economy going. So basically, the people at Tropical Shipping issued a press release after the revised proposals, effectively claiming victory because now they could continue operating these services without these fees being imposed upon them.
Great.
But the Caribbean is also home to a number of large-scale transshipment hubs. We're talking Kingston in Jamaica, Freeport, Bahamas, Caicedo in the Dominican Republic, operated by DP World, and Cartagena in Colombia, and all of which are also under the 2,000 nautical mile threshold, which could very much act, I think, as a sort of future loophole, especially for the sort of Chinese carriers that we've been talking about on how the Chinese carriers could be priced out of some of the Trans-Pacific trades, but not if, of course, they put those vessels into one of these transshipment hubs, and then those transshipment hubs forwarded on those sort of US-bound cargoes on feeder vessels into the US. I mean, I know that the US has sort of outlined that it would look to apply its tariffs on Chinese goods that are coming through Vancouver or Mexican ports and over the land borders. They're going to make sure there's not going to be any like sidestepping of the fees. But operationally, it's going to be very difficult if you're talking, you know, hundreds of thousands of containers going into a Caribbean transship and then, you know, redistributed back into the US. So it's a loophole. It's a big potential loophole. And I think it would be really interesting to see after October how network changes. You might find that US inbound container flows are increasingly going through Caribbean transshipment hub. And of course, it will also depend on how much it actually costs to transship via the Caribbean compared to what it might cost in the heightened USTR fees.
Shipping absolutely loves a transshipment loophole. It's like similar to what we saw with the EU ETS fees when it's like, right, where can we go?
It's so similar to that. Yeah. It's very, very similar to that. And, you know, I mean, a lot of people in Europe have talked about the UK's position as being outside the ETS. It's a very similar situation. So it's going to provide a lot of work for network planners.
Something else that we reported last week was the very weak demand outlook paired with huge oversupply. Gav, you did a summary of the rising blank sailings we saw. Something I wanted to speak about is the demand outlook that Drewry predicted that 2025 was set to be the third year on record since 1979 that would show a drop in container demand, joining the years of COVID and the financial crisis. But then they said that if this October deadline is given for the USTR, this might cause front loading. And then as we get closer to the end of the 90-day pause for the so-called reciprocal tariffs, we might see front loading. And if Trump announces a slash on his tariffs on China, which he suggested, that might also see front loading. I mean, basically, no one can predict when a peak season might occur or when sudden blank is announced. Have the rates told us anything this week?
I mean, no, they haven't. No, I mean, which increasingly appears to be the story about rates. And I think I might have gone off with a little rant about it last week. So we've had some very slight declines on the East-West trades, but frankly, it's not really even worth going to. But I do think you're right in highlighting the precariousness of demand and how urgently we need more up-to-date data, as it were. I'm sure there'd be all sorts of tech providers screaming at me right now. But anyway, there's a really excellent US line analyst called John McCown, who, by the way, submitted a very comprehensive response to the USTR proposals. And I think many of the revisions, such as the 2,000 nautical mile threshold, etc., actually were on his suggestion. Mr. McCown was looking at the March data. So you've got the top 10 US ports. They were 11% up on March 2024, which in itself was a strong month. But he also noted that you have 81 blank sailings announced for April, and that is way higher than the 51 blank sailings per month average during the height of the pandemic. So clearly carriers are withdrawing a lot more capacity than they withdrew at the pandemic, which surely indicates that demand is really weak at the moment. He additionally, if I may just be so bold as to quote him, he says, growth in 2025 will be well off the 2024 pace. In fact, if the tariffs and the USTR ship fees in place now continue, my view is that it is almost certain that there will be a double-digit percent reduction in annual volume for all of 2025 compared to 2024. You've got to surmise that demand is looking very weak.
Yeah, I did a report at the end of last week from Drury's Simon Heaney, and he said that these blank sailings are only a stopgap solution and that there needs to be some serious scrappage going on.
Yeah, and then the knock-on effect of that is, what does that do to steel prices? Because if you get a sudden influx of ships heading towards the breakers yards in India and Pakistan and Bangladesh, that can then affect global steel prices because you inject global into steel volumes. And then the price that the breakers are willing to pay for the old ships goes down. So then owners have a conundrum. Do they bother scrapping ships at really low prices but they need to scrap them in order to maintain the earnings from the ships that are offering. Goodness.
It all sounds very complicated. So let's move over to air. And another deadline that we are nearing that could see an import rush take place is the 2nd of May deadline for de minimis exemption revocation for shipments under $800 in the US, which is usually e-commerce. I'm now joined by the Lodestar's Alex Linnane. Alex, have the air rates given us any indication of what shippers are doing in air?
Well, even before this, the tariffs alone for shipments above $800 have upset air cargo a bit. One of the main concerns of most people in the industry has been more about delays to the system rather than the actual tariffs or de minimis exemption. And we're already seeing this. Last week, DHL Express suspended B2C shipments with a value of over $800 because it can't offer the service levels that it wants to be able to offer. Now, we understand that it's only B2C because the B2B environment already has import processes in place. They understand data requirements and so on. The suspension is going to last until DHL is sure that the processes are in place that will allow it to deliver its normal service levels. It said it would scale up clearance capacity as soon as possible. As far as de minimis goes, Temu and Shein, the Chinese e-commerce platforms, told their US customers that they will increase prices this week because of the US policy changes. There have been recent increased sales on these platforms, which suggests that there's been a last-minute rush by US shoppers before the May deadline. China-US air cargo rates, though, are about levels at the moment. They've climbed a lot through March, according to Freightos. But in general, last week, air rates didn't move very much. TAC Index said it had seen significant decline in rates out of Singapore and an increase out of Heathrow. But in general, rates have stayed broadly flat, so we'll have to see how that changes.
Well, Trump and tariffs are not the only issue for supply chains, although sometimes it does feel like that. But we reported that there have been other problems in air elsewhere in the world.
Well, another little snafu coming up is that Mumbai has announced a suspension of freighter operations from mid-August so that it can do some infrastructure changes. Some 24 airlines apparently operate freighters there, so it could be quite a blow, especially to pharma shippers, perishables, that sort of thing. And in fact, this could become even more difficult. Pakistan and India have revived their long-running spat. Pakistan has closed its airspace to Indian carriers, which will likely impact those operating out of Delhi the most. However, so far it's only for Indian carriers, but they are seeing an extra 2 hours on flights to various destinations, which is quite a high cost they might not be able to absorb. Another one to watch.
Alex, I also want to ask you about the update on the case you've been following involving Flexport, who is suing a startup, Freightmate.ai, for stealing trade secrets. What are the updates here?
Oh, I love a Flexport law case. Who doesn't? You've got to hand it to Freightmate's lawyers. They've used some beautifully colourful language to talk about Flexport's case. These words like gibberish, flimsy. It's fun to read. It seems that the two co-founders of Freightmates did download some data from Flexport, as Flexport claimed, but they maintain that it was just as a test case. They put it through ChatGPT just to see how the AI fared. I mean, there was also a lot of personal stuff they downloaded from Flexport after a laptop update. So there's a lot in there that's not quite relevant. Freightmate also claimed that they didn't know what their product would be until they left Flexport. Oh, just briefly, these two founders were Flexport staff executives and left Flexport to set up a new company, Freightmate. Sorry. My favourite quote from their court case was that Flexport's case would look good to investors, but not to lawyers. That's paraphrasing a little bit, but it says something about Flexport possibly. In my experience of reading a lot of court cases, these cases tend to be settled. But I don't know if Freightmate will be able to afford to. It's raised $5.6 million so far over two rounds, but it's quite a problematic court case for such a young company.
Well, while we're looking at legal disputes, it would be a good time to talk about the conclusion of a case from the Federal Maritime Commission involving Zim and Samsung. So while Samsung was claiming around $12 million in unfair detention and demurrage charges, the FMC found that the Israeli ocean carrier Zim was responsible for a smaller portion of this and was ordered to award Samsung around $3.6 million for demurrage charges that violated the Shipping Act. This case has now been dismissed and officially closed, But Samsung still have a few ongoing grievances with the FMC and detention and demurrage cases involving HMM, Costco, OOCL and SM Line. But back to air before I get completely sidetracked. Alex, you also had a story that three oneworld airlines, Qatar Airways, IAG and Malaysia Airlines, were looking to form a joint global cargo business. Can you give some details, please? Is this like similar to the ocean carrier alliances in the sea freight sector?
Alliances in the air are quite different from in the sea. I'd love to give you some more details on this, but quite honestly, I've read everything I can and there just aren't many details out yet. I think this is really interesting, though. Air cargo alliances have often struggled beyond limited routes. There are ones like Lufthansa Cargo and All Nippon Airways, which actually is currently suspended because ANA is taking over NCA. But you don't see, or I haven't seen, something quite as sort of comprehensive as this across three airlines and their global cargo business. SkyTeam Cargo has had some success in this, to be fair. But there tend to be a host of problems with cargo partnerships. Regulatory is the number one, obviously. But there's also trust and culture. A lot of worries about, is the other airline doing better out of the deal? And then, of course, there's technology, which has to be all aligned. In this case, IAG and Qatar are already close. Qatar's a shareholder in IAG. And it looks like it could be a good network. But it seems to me there are many, many hurdles to clear. And I expect a lot of decisions to be made in how this will eventually look.
Obviously, as I mentioned in the last episode, we are now in Q1 earnings report season. Last week, we saw Kuehne and Nagel's figures. What did they show, Gav?
They've been pretty strong. Quarterly revenues are up to 6.3 billion Swiss francs. That's 7.66 billion US EBIT. And earnings were sort of in line, so I think slightly above analyst expectations. So it was reasonably solid. A couple of things. One is it was last year they bought this US drayage provider, like an intermodal service provider in the US called IMC Logistics. So we found out the purchase price for that, which turns out to be $650 million. A couple of other interesting points. The gross profit per TU was up 11%, and that is the lag of high freight rates at the end of the last quarter of 2024 assisting in the forwarders' earnings. And I guess also the other point is that we're now sort of into the 15th month of its big management turnaround plan, where it's reorganized how the regional offices report into the head office. The CEO, Stephan Paul, talks a good game about the reorganization plan, and they're very bullish about it. Staff on board with it, you know, we hear a lot of different things. So to put it politely, I'd say the jury is still out on the management turnaround plan, but the latest figures look good.
Thank you very much, Gav.
You're very welcome.
So now we have got you up to date with everything that happened last week. Here is what you might see on the Loadstart this week. We've got some webinars if anyone is interested in attending, or you can read the highlights on thelodestar.com. So there's an Ocean Score webinar on Tuesday looking at the Fuel EU roadmap and different commercial strategies to manage this cost. Also on Tuesday, there is an IRU webinar looking at how transport and logistics companies are decarbonizing and some future pathways to that. On the 30th of April, the DSV DB Schenker takeover will be complete. And this is also the same day that DSV will be reporting its Q1 financials, along with DHL and C.H. Robinson. So lots to look forward to there. Probably also lots to not look forward to if there are yet again more changes announced to US trade policy or tariffs. On April the 28th, so Monday this week, the CBP said it will publish a Federal Register notice regarding the presidential actions eliminating the de minimis exemption or products from China and Hong Kong. They didn't reveal what was in store for exporters from other countries. So that's going to be another wait and see. Alex Linnane will be doing an interview with Cargolux, so we'll have some interesting insight from them. And finally, I want to mention that I am on the judging panel for TIAACA's Inspirational Leader Award that recognises an industry leader who has motivated and inspired young people in the air cargo industry. So we are looking for submissions from people in the industry under age 35, someone who has inspired them. There is an official portal for submissions on the TIAACA website. Or if you'd prefer, get in touch with me and I will put your submission forward to the other jury members. Thank you so much for joining me this week and I will see you next time.